Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, Brian Lynn tells us how people in the Netherlands are dealing with strong emotions. He also presents this week's technology report. We close with the next episode of our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, Argentina is experiencing extremely hot weather. Temperatures in some parts of the South American nation have neared 45 degrees Celsius, making it the hottest place on the planet for a short period. The heat wave has put pressure on power systems and forced Argentines to seek cooler air in the shade. Hundreds of thousands of people in the capital, Buenos Aires, were without electricity after power systems failed. I came home and we were without electricity, and the house was a furnace, said 42-year-old José Casabal. He took his children out of the house to find somewhere to cool down. I took them to their grandmother's house to swim in the pool, he said. The heat wave made Argentina the hottest place on Earth for several hours, taking over from parts of Australia that cooled during the night. Even early morning, it was very hot, around 31 degrees, said Gustavo Barrios, who is 34. I do not have air conditioning at home, and we were with just the fan blowing hot air. It's unbearable. Local leaders warned residents to stay out of the sun in the hottest part of the day, wear light clothing, and drink plenty of water. We have to be very careful these days, said Buenos Aires City Mayor Horacio Rodriguez Larreta. Weather expert Lucas Berengua said the heat wave could set records in the country. This is a heat wave of extraordinary characteristics, he said. For some, the heat wave raised questions about climate change, as well as more extreme weather to come. Marta LaRusso, 59, said she has lived in Argentina her whole life. She said she remembers when the climate in her country was temperate, not too hot and not too cold. Today, things are different. I drink liters of water and do what I can, she said. And on top of it all, without electricity, I don't know what to do.
Some Dutch citizens have found new ways to release their anger about the continuing COVID-19 pandemic by shouting and smashing things. Twin brothers Stephen and Brian Kreischer showed a reporter from Reuters how enjoyable it can be to crush cars at a vehicle wreckage center in the town of Pfaffenhuizen near Amsterdam. One used a sledgehammer and the other a crowbar to destroy a Peugeot 106 car. The exercise is part of a Dutch program called Car Smash. It aims to give people living under new antivirus restrictions ways to release their anger and frustrations. The feelings have built up during a pandemic that is now entering its third year. Dutch bars, restaurants, and most stores have been closed since mid-December when the new measures took effect. The restrictions are set to remain in place until at least January 14th. The government is seeking to contain record numbers of coronavirus cases. "There is nothing to do these days," Brian told Reuters. "We can't work because we own a bar and we are closed. So we thought we'd let some of that frustration go and smash a car." Merlene Buschhausen runs the Car Smash program. He said people taking part are first asked to spray paint what's present in their lives onto their chosen vehicle. Then, when they start wrecking a car, they are asked to close their eyes and feel their feet on the ground. Buschhausen says the goal is for the person to feel the power, every vein in your body, feel what you are doing, and in that way to try to get it out of your life. Nearby, in The Hague, voice trainer Julie Scott operates Screech at the Beach. It is a program with similar aims as Car Smash. Scott told Reuters she developed the idea while looking for something physical and something to release some of the tension that has been building up in people. On a recent day, Julie joined Rosa Maureen Cardick on a windy beach near the shore. Cardick jumped up and down, shouting until she ran out of breath while trying not to laugh. "You can just, let yourself go," Cardick said. She is a business secretary hoping to learn to speak with more confidence in her professional life. "You don't have to think about other things. It's the wideness of the beach and the sea," Cardick said. "Your voice goes over the sea and it doesn't return to you. It's a sense of freedom." I'm Brian Lynn.
Dogs can tell the difference between different languages, researchers in Hungary have found. For their study, the researchers played recordings of the story The Little Prince in both Spanish and Hungarian to a group of 18 dogs. Then they examined how the animals' brains reacted. The study was led by Laura V. Quaya at Eötvös Loránd University in Budapest. She moved to Hungary from Mexico a few years ago and brought her dog Kun-Kun with her. I wondered whether Kun-Kun noticed that people in Budapest spoke a different language, Hungarian, she said. She said the study found for the first time that a non-human brain can distinguish between languages. Raúl Hernández-Pérez is a co-writer of the study. He said that when dogs live with humans, they can learn patterns of the language they hear. During the experiment, Kun-Kun and other dogs were trained to lie down in a brain scanner for several minutes. Every dog in the study had heard only one of two languages spoken by their owners, either Hungarian or Spanish. Then, researchers compared how their brains reacted to a highly familiar language and to a completely unfamiliar one. Quaya said that dogs could understand the differences in how the two languages are spoken.
To listen to the rest of this story, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
The huge American-based technology show CES has changed in recent years because of the COVID-19 pandemic. Last year, an online version of the event was held for the first time. This year, the physical show returned to Las Vegas, Nevada. But the number of attendees decreased by about 70%. In addition, several major technology companies suddenly decided to pull out, the Associated Press reported. CES is produced by the Consumer Technology Association. It is known as the place where many companies launch their latest technology offerings. Here is a look at some of the top products presented at CES 2022. Taiwanese computer maker Asus announced the launch of a foldable laptop computer. It is called the ZenBook 17 Fold. While several companies have already launched foldable versions of phones, the idea has not yet caught on with laptop computers. The company says its new device is a powerful personal computer, or PC, with a high-quality OLED display that is about 44 centimeters across. But it folds down to about 32 centimeters for easier transport. Electronics maker AirSelfie launched its latest self-flying camera designed to take selfie pictures. The new device, called AirPix, is a small, light camera that flies through the air and captures high-quality photographs and video. A video on the company's website explains that AirPix can fly, frame, and take pictures all by itself before landing back on the user's hand. Technology company Anker announced the launch of an all-in-one device designed to improve communications for employees working from home. The AnchorWork B600 sits on top of the computer display like a traditional webcam. But it combines several elements of communication into one device that includes a camera, speaker, microphone, and a light. TP-Link showed off a new Wi-Fi router that the company says uses robotic antennas to find and lock onto the best wireless signals to improve internet speeds and performance. Images of the Archer AXE200 Omni device show its motorized antennas rising, falling, and changing positions in search of strong signals. Robot maker Labrador announced the launch of its retriever robot. CES has historically been known to present different kinds of robots, including many designed to look and act like people or animals. But Labrador says its retriever robot was designed to be truly useful in helping those who need assistance at home. The small self-driving machine is designed to hold things and, as its name suggests, also retrieve things. The robot can be controlled by voice commands or from an app on a phone. It can also be programmed based on an exact map of a user's home. The company says the retriever is designed to serve as an extra pair of hands and lighten the load of everyday tasks in the home. South Korean electronics maker Samsung is known for announcing major new products at CES. Many involve bigger television sets with new abilities. This year, the company presented several new computer displays meant to serve people who play video games known as gamers. One of them, called the Odyssey Arc, has a curved design and measures nearly 140 centimeters. Samsung demonstrated how the huge display can also be turned on its side to curve right above the user's head for a more intense gaming experience. American-based farm equipment manufacturer John Deere presented a fully self-driving tractor. The company says the vehicle is equipped with 6 different cameras and a series of sensors to guide the tractor through the fields. Farmers can control the vehicle and see the tractor's progress in real time through a mobile device. John Deere says the idea is to help farmers do more work with less equipment and people. The company noted that such machines can help improve farming methods as the world's population grows and food demand is expected to rise 50% by 2050. I'm Brian Lin.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. Theodore Roosevelt was President of the United States during the early years of the 20th century. He was a forceful leader. His national policies led to social reforms and federal protection of nature. His foreign policy led to greater American involvement in world events. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of the presidency of Theodore Roosevelt.
In 1903, Panama declared its independence from Colombia. 15 days later, Panama and the United States signed a treaty. The treaty gave the United States the right to build a canal across Panama. To protect the canal, President Roosevelt declared greater responsibility for a wide area around the canal. The greatest responsibility was financial. Roosevelt said the United States would guarantee repayment of loans made to Latin American countries. He did this to prevent European countries from using the issue of non-payment as an excuse to seize new territory in the Western Hemisphere.
Some Latin American nations were in serious economic trouble. Venezuela was one. At that time, Venezuela owed millions of dollars to Britain and Germany. The Venezuelan ruler refused to make payments on the loans. Britain and Germany decided to use force to get the money. Their ships began blocking Venezuela's ports. When they began shelling coastal areas, President Roosevelt intervened. He urged them to let the International Court of Arbitration at The Hague settle the dispute. They agreed, and the blockade of Venezuela ended.
Less than 2 years later, a similar financial problem arose in the Dominican Republic. revolutions and dictatorships there prevented repayment of foreign loans. The United States offered a solution. It would take over collection of import taxes at ports in the Dominican Republic. 45% of the money would be paid to the Dominican government. The other 55% would be used to repay loans. The Dominican Republic agreed. The plan succeeded. Some countries in Latin America and the Caribbean questioned the right of the United States to act as policeman for the Western Hemisphere, but none openly opposed President Roosevelt's policy.
Theodore Roosevelt had become president after the assassination of President William McKinley. He completed the last 3 years of McKinley's term. Then he was ready to be elected in his own right. Republican Party leaders, however, were not so sure. Roosevelt had made businessmen angry because of his attempts to control big companies. But he made voters happy because of his fight for social reforms. Roosevelt's only serious competitor for the nomination was a longtime senator and presidential advisor. But the man died before the nominating convention. So Roosevelt won the nomination easily.
The Democratic Party, in the past two elections, had nominated a progressive, Congressman William Jennings Bryan, as its candidate. This time, the Democrats chose a more conservative candidate. He was a New York judge, Alton Parker. Judge Parker had no chance to win the election. Theodore Roosevelt was the best-known man in America. He won easily. On Inauguration Day, Roosevelt made a short speech. He said, America's capitalist economic system had done much good for the country, but it also had created a crisis in social relations, and the crisis had to be solved. If we fail, Roosevelt said, the cause of self-government throughout the world will suffer greatly.
During his new term in office, President Roosevelt was able to get Congress to approve two major new laws. One was the Hepburn Act. This law gave the Interstate Commerce Commission power to limit how much railroads could charge for transporting goods. The purpose was to keep the cost of railroad transportation reasonable. The other new law was the Pure Food and Drug Act. This law declared it illegal to make or sell foods and medicines containing harmful chemicals. The purpose was to protect the health of all Americans.
President Roosevelt's most important foreign policy success came as a result of a war between Russia and Japan. At that time, Russia occupied Manchuria in northern China. Japan occupied Korea. Japan wanted control of Manchuria. It needed that area's coal and iron ore. Japan also wanted to end any Russian threat to Korea. So it decided to fight. Japan's navy easily defeated all the Russian fleets sent to the Pacific, but the two sides continued to fight on land. When both began to run out of money, they accepted President Roosevelt's offer to make peace.
Roosevelt invited Japanese and Russian diplomats to meet with him in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. He told them his greatest hope and prayer was for them to find a just and lasting peace quickly. A quick settlement, however, was not easy. Japan demanded $600 million for war damages. It also wanted Sakhalin Island. Russia rejected both demands. It had agreed to give up southern Manchuria. Russia would give up nothing else. Negotiations lasted many days. President Roosevelt became more and more angry when neither side would compromise. But he remained calm and kept the talks going. Later, he said, "What I really wanted to do was give an angry shout, jump up, and knock their heads together."
Finally, Roosevelt made a secret appeal to the Emperor of Japan. He asked the Emperor to drop demands for money and for Sakhalin Island. He warned that Russia was ready to fight again if the peace talks failed. The Emperor agreed to drop the demand for money, but he still demanded half of Sakhalin Island. Russia agreed to this compromise. The two sides signed a peace treaty.
Theodore Roosevelt received the Nobel Peace Prize for negotiating an end to the Russian-Japanese War. However, his efforts were denounced in Japan. Roosevelt was held responsible for the loss of war damage payments. It was money Japan needed badly. Anti-American riots broke out in some parts of the country. At the same time, tense relations developed between American citizens and Japanese immigrants in California. Poor Japanese immigrants were willing to work for low pay. As a result, Americans lost jobs. They protested. Then, school officials in San Francisco barred Japanese children from attending school with white children. President Roosevelt opposed the decision. He asked the officials to lift the ban. In exchange, he agreed to ask Japan to stop its poor farmers and laborers from going to live in America. Japan said it would. The understanding became known as the Gentleman's Agreement.
Roosevelt worked hard to improve America's relations with Japan. Yet he made clear that the United States would defend its interests in Asia and the Pacific. As a warning, he sent a naval force on a voyage around the world. The force included 16 battleships and 12,000 men. It was called the Great White Fleet. The voyage lasted 14 months. The fleet sailed down the Atlantic coast of South America. It went around the bottom of South America into the Pacific Ocean, then on to Hawaii, Australia, and Japan. Surprisingly, it received its warmest welcome in Japan. An American reporter said, "The fleet made a deep and far-reaching impression. It caused the Japanese to understand the great power of the United States, as nothing else could possibly have done." President Roosevelt believed this show of American strength prevented war with Japan. "Sending out the fleet," he said, "was the most important thing I did for peace."
Theodore Roosevelt greatly enjoyed playing the part of peacemaker. After successfully ending the war between Russia and Japan, he was asked to settle another international dispute. At issue was control over Morocco.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.